soup agenda.
So, yes.
So, anyway, Webcomics Weekly. Let's talk webcomics.
I think that's been 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We're a quarter of the way through.
Let's climb on board the train.
Killing time. And a total disrespect for your day.
Let's do it. Who wants to start us off with their first question of awesomeness?
There's going to be one of you two. Hold on.
All right. I'll start us off then. Here we go. Bitty Body Boom. All right. This is from Ken Drab of the website rickthestick.com.
Hey, that doesn't sound good.
I know that.
Ooh.
Hey-o.
What's that about?
My.
Yikes.
He's performing on the fire stage later on tonight. All right. So here we go. Here is his question. How do I actually get my community started from zero? This is from Absolute Zero. How do you get a community started from Absolute Zero? Nobody's reading. How do you get started?
Well, step one, call your mom.
And there she is.
You know what? As we talk, I'm gonna ring up the audience. Bing, we're at one. Okay,
all
keep
right.
going.
Step two, have your mother call everyone in her Tupperware circle. No.
Bing, 16.
No, bing, 10,000. You've made it.
It's a huge Tupperware circle.
No, I think it starts with your content. They need a reason to be there in the first place. And then after that, they can start talking, right?
Yes.
Hello?
Can you hear us?
On? Is this on? Hello? Is this on?
Are we talking about a community of readers or a community where they're just
like a forum?
Like a forum where they're talking.
Where they interact.
Oh, see, I take it as – I took his question as like you literally have never put up a webcomic. You just put up your first, let's say, 30 because you were smart and you followed our advice. You put up your first 30 – how do you get that first reader? How do you get that first 10 readers? How do you get the first 100 readers?
Oh, like not even forum. But
I don't think
readers.
So, Dave. I think he's asking about a community. Like how does he –
right.
Look, we can follow the whole tree up, you know.
We've discussed the how do you get readers question a bajillion times though. Let's address the community question.
To me, starting a community, it should be as simple as putting a link to a forum on your front page and saying, here's the new forum. And if your content is engaging and facilitates discussion, then you've given them a place to do it and they will.
Yeah, know? Or even a comment section in the blog. For some, some may not want that.
Brad, this is a good question for you because you have that shout box, right?
I did. And
well, I was going to ask you.
I got rid of it. Because instead of facilitating the kind of discussion that I wanted to facilitate, it facilitated more like little drive-by nitpickings and stuff like that wasn't really adding anything to the community. If interesting discussion happened there, I would have kept it. But it was just like kind of this drive-by stuff, and it wasn't easy for people to talk back and forth and discuss.
Oh.
And finally I decided that it just wasn't worth keeping on there, and I put a whole lot more value in my forum and my the comment section of my blog.
That's right. True. But, you know, maybe, though, for somebody starting out, do you think it might be better to if only to get people to speak up at all, to say something? Rather
yeah,
than just leave.
One of the strengths of the shout box is that you don't have to register to use it. You can just dash off a quick note and it gets posted. And so in that regard, for a startup comic, it's not a bad decision. At some point, I think you're going to have to come to a point like I did where you wonder whether it's worth the real estate it takes up on your page. But to start out, no, it's not a bad idea at all.
It might require a little bit of definition. The shout box that you had was a little, it might have been JavaScript.
I must have missed this. What was the shout box?
It was a little applet that sits on your index page. I mean, you can put it anywhere, but it sits on your
site,
like in your sidebar.
Yeah.
And people can type in their name and a comment, and it just shows up immediately.
Oh.
And it's short. Like, you can't type a paragraph. You can
no.
type, like, a sentence.
It's like they get to Twitter on your site.
It's Twittering
exactly.
for,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's a Twittering.
Exactly. Thing. And then it's almost like a kind of a semi-chat.
So I guess everyone has, like, a different interpretation of this question, but, like, I think an important part of building a community that isn't necessarily just putting up a forum for people to talk is to develop the community that you want. I read a a book called The Cult of Branding. God, I wish I could I wish I knew who wrote that book. But it talked about how marketing people
apparently they weren't very good at it.
No, no. I'll look it up. Jerk. Now everyone has to wait while I look it up because Chris screwed it up for everybody.
That's all right.
Good job, Chris. Good job.
The laughs eat up some time.
Way to be charitable, Chris Straub. Way to be charitable. Mm.
That's Chris Straub.
I don't – now I'm not – now I got to go to Amazon because I can't find it on Google.
Chris, the best would be if you're like, well, that's the Chris Straub brand, being a jerk.
And then I just tip over his juice.
You just been straubed.
See you later.
Tip over his juice.
Oh, you got a good straubing.
And then you give me like a logo card,
and it says you've been straubed on it.
Yeah, you give me a T-shirt. You give me a T-shirt that says I've been straubed.
But on the back of the card, it just says free printings at Vistaprint.com.
I'm the cheapest guy.
It's like the cheapest business card you could use.
It's a long road ahead.
All right. Look, I can't find it. But anyway, the point is I read the book, you jerks.
Hey, by the way, round of applause for that. So let's
– Wow. Man. Is this what it's like to be talking to me?
All
right. Notice how Chris has not jumped to my defense with take it easy on the guy. Anyway, in The Cult of Branding, they discussed how it used to be that marketing companies in their marketing would be every customer's right, every customer's a customer that we want. It's complete inclusion. And now they've changed it to where it's no, we want to pick the type of customer we want, the type of person that we want to be our customer. We're going to say no to the types of customers that we don't want, that aren't going to help cultivate our brand for us.
Yeah.
So you establish as a marketer for your company, you establish a brand, you establish the community that you want to see for your product, and you only do things that will foster customers that will improve that brand, that will foster that community, and you deny the customers that destroy it. So what you can do to build your community is when you get emails, when you see posts and forums that reinforce your brand, for example, someone takes a picture with your book or someone makes a good review or a comment, you highlight it, you endorse it on your site, and you start building with your readers an awareness of what you're going to respond to as a creator.
Yeah.
And then you can foster that. You can foster the community that you want.
That's kind of right. That's exactly what Brad did when he took that down. When his readers come to the site now, they're not bombarded with, I don't know if you drew panel two quite whatever.
Yeah, it's the same reason I had to turn off commenting on my blog.
Yeah.
But a good example of that for me was putting up the Flickr group of Skull Around the World, where people take their skull plush and take pictures of it in different locations around the world.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're
doing things to include like right. creativity. You're asking them to give you something.
And then also you have to be the number one founding prime perfect example member of your own community. So the posts you make, the Twitter posts, the feeds you make, comments, things that you're guiding how you want your readers to think and feel and comment as well, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, right, you're both the organizer.
Oh, go ahead, Dave.
No, Brad, you go ahead.
If you're posting a number of upbeat, positive comments like Dave does on Sheldon Comics on a regular basis, it's no surprise to find out that his readers react in a really upbeat, positive way. You never see Dave making a post that, you know, he's feeling really crummy today, or, you know, he's really upset at the mailman today because he didn't bring his mail on time or something. You read very little negative on Sheldon Comics, and as a result, I think his readers respond to him in a really upbeat, positive way. And that's partially, and I've never thought of it this way, Scott, but you're right. It's partially because he has, in a way, sought out those readers for inclusion.
Yeah, and it works too.
And you know what? I'll go a step further with it with a sort of an example of that is that you know, Sheldon is for all intents and purposes an all ages strip, and you know, and it's sort of a rare thing online that essentially my nieces and nephews could read it too. And not too long ago, I had some joker that on the forum that kept mentioning there was this and that porn reference And I sent him a private message and I said, look, I like and respect that you're a Sheldon reader and, you know, I appreciate you wanted to post in the forum. But if you're not smart enough to realize that this is an all-ages strip and that there might be kids reading this, then I do not want you posting on the forum and I don't want you saying anything. And if you can't – it was literally – it was a longer form version of if you can't say anything nice, don't say it at all. And that sort of thing, you have to do that to maintain your audience. You have to have a flexibility with your community, but have a firm hand at times to maintain the tone and the audience and the people that you want on there, because it's an extension of you. It's an extension of your brand and of the mood and the emotions that you want out there in the world for your comic strip. You know,
I think I think that this question has led to super interesting commentary by you guys, but I feel like what we're talking about is culling the, you know, the wheat from the chaff when you have audience and you want to now start to zero in on the audience that's going to do the best by you.
Right.
But as far as cultivating an audience to start with, I think you have to start at your content. And we've talked about that so much. You know.
But Chris, you also – don't you think – you're right because we stepped away from the question. I think originally though, and we've addressed this before, is that you have to understand that when your community is first commenting, what they're really doing is having a conversation with you in public. They're not – they haven't formed yet enough to have a conversation with each other, which is what you eventually want. So you have to be an active participant at first in your community. And then you can taper off more as the years go on.
That's true.
But at first, you are the central organizing principle for why they're even talking in the first place.
And you can foster that conversation too. Like I remember one time I made a post about movies I don't think young people would see on their own, and maybe they wouldn't if their parents suggested it because their parents were suggesting it. And so I said, look, every young person out there that enjoyed Star Wars, you need to or Lord of the Rings, you need to make the time to see Lawrence of Arabia. And don't worry about it being an old movie. Trust me, you will enjoy it. You will like it. You will find something awesome about it. And I'm going to post a link to forums. I want to hear what you think, especially if you're under the age of 20 and you just saw Lawrence of Arabia. And that led to a huge discussion about, you know, a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're facilitating that. That's not necessarily talking about the comic strip. But you know, you can do things to foster –
that's true.
Discussion.
To engage.
Yeah.
I like
it. Well, it's kind of like hosting a party in which a lot of the guests at that party don't know each other. And you've got to kind of be the one to go around and make the introductions.
Yeah. I'm a little verklempt.
That's actually not a bad metaphor. That's pretty
right?
good.
Right? And you've got to come up and find something that maybe two or three people in the room are going to have in common.
Topic of discussion, Duran Duran was neither Duran nor Duran. Discuss.
No, but you know what, Brad, though? You're right in the sense, too, that just like an awkward party can be sometimes, you'll start a game just to get people going. And sometimes right. in a community, you'll start a poll or a forum topic or you know, some sort of contest just to get things moving. And that's not a bad comparison.
Let me just say that I've been to Brad's parties before, and getting naked is never the right way to encourage.
What's up, guys? So anyway, my comic strip's pretty cool. Glad you read it. What else? Hey, sandwiches, Subway versus Quiznos, right? I like Quiznos because it's crispy.
What are you doing?
Bread. Boobs.
You're scaring them away.
Go ahead, Brad.
Another thought on that is
these two.
That
what?
Wow, that one little comment. Wow. So the third time they talked over each other, so I didn't think they would hear me say it. I was saying to you in the room, these two. Brad heard it. So sorry, I'm facilitating a community here in between the four.
You know what? Now anytime Brad talks, I'm just going to start talking.
Let's all do it.
Dave, you've already been doing that. So,
I mean. I know. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm 3,000 miles away from him. What do you want?
Anyway, Brad, go ahead.
Here's the deal.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. His name is my name too. Oh, sorry.
Guys, we're at the double 15-minute mark. Let's start to wrap this up.
I would also caution you to back away from the dark side, and what I mean by that is this. Anybody who's ever listened to any amount of talk radio knows that if there's a DJ that's trying to do a show and he is getting no calls on his call-in show, the first thing he's going to go to is abortion or gays in the military or something that is something that's so utterly divisive and so utterly inflammatory that he knows his phones are going to light up. And I think you can do that for a short-term gain, but I think there's a long-term loss on that that is counterproductive to your ultimate goals. You can't build a community by dividing it. Yeah. And you may find out that posting inflammatory comments on your blogs may give you a huge boost in comments, but over the length of time, that's just going to hurt you.
Because you have jerks now.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Again, going back to what Scott said, you are attracting jerks to your site by being a jerk.
Well, I don't know if you guys remember it, but in the book I talk about that whole idea. I think it's true, and maybe you guys can correct me if you think it's wrong. But I think that over time you do attract an audience that is fundamentally you. And so the mood and the comments and the themes and the tones that you put out through your comic strip and through your blog over the years will eventually filter out this or that type of person, and you'll be left with a person that's or an audience that's 90% a reflection of what you are.
Dave, that is so depressing.
True. But I speak from personal experience because I've listened to Brad, kids, because I have done what he is warning you against. I've been the negative Nancy. I've been the here's how it is, kids.
Well, you had to do damage control. You had to restrict comments, and you had to.
Well, because I fostered a complete group of negativity. You know, I mean, it was,
and it's largely gone now.
Yeah. I've really kind of reconstructed, but it took almost a whole year and a half to do it.
Yeah. But that's why I was saying in the book too that you cannot underestimate the power of being kind in your blogs and your emails and your public appearances, because over time, over those thousands of emails and those hundreds of blog posts and those dozens of appearances over years, you'll find a quantitative return in kindness back to you if you are kind to your readers. And I see it every day, and it's I know for a fact that it works it's not just the golden rule. It genuinely is good business practice to be kind to your readers, because it will pay you back. I have an incredibly kind readership just because I'm kind to them.
They'll take care of you.
They will.
I mean, that's – I asked a lot of people when I was opening my store in-house. I asked a lot of other cartoonists that I felt were doing really well, how they were doing and how they did it. One of the people I asked was Ryan Summer over at Least I Could Do When Looking for Group. And I said, how do you get your sales up so high? Because they're quite impressive. And he goes, I don't know. We just – I put out a strip, on time, and I treat my readers as best as I can, and they've always taken care of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
– and that goes for building a community too.
Yeah.
So. There you go.
So there we go. Well, I think we probably tapped that one out.
let's keep going.
I have a question. I'll do the next question.
Go ahead.
I've got to go back and find it again now because I left.
Oh,
the...
God. I know which one you're going to do. Go ahead.
Well, what?
Talking about shows. No.
Go ahead. Keep on. I want to hear it. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I don't have that question. I'm going to do the one about the guy that was going to ask you about that one specific technical question.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good.
Tap, type it in.
Hold on. I had to go find The Cult of Branding for all you guys that didn't believe I read a book last year.
Oh, Scott, we knew you read a book.
I didn't finish it.
And then cut to Scott going, the rain in Spain falls mainly.
Are you my moth? No. Moth, no? Mo?
You know this word.
Mother. Mother. Mother.
Break it up into bits. Break it up into bits.
And now Google's not loading. What is it with? The internet's against me.
Well, paraphrase it.
Well, the question was something like, Brad, you ignorant bastard, you gave me 12 steps, I only need 6. Why? But I can't get to it now. But anyway, the point was that on page 50 of our book, which is on sale right now at every website but mine, because I took mine off sale because I have to get stuff shipped out.
In the storm.
No. I just got so behind with everything that all right. So anyway, they talk about scanning an artwork. Brad, help me out here.
Yeah, basically.
Can any of you that have it in front of you?
You know, I'm actually, Scott, believe it or not, I'm trying to help you. I can't find it. It was on page 65.
Aha. I've gotten into my Gmail account.
It's working.
It's suddenly working.
No.
We can cut all of this is going to get cut out.
Well, I can paraphrase it.
Yeah. No. Now I'm doing it. Now I'm reading it.
Go one down. That guy. Yeah,
that one. Okay, Mark Ashworth asks. He says, okay, I give up. Chapter 4, page 50, describes a method for scanning images using Photoshop. I have followed these instructions, and I cannot find any reason for step 8 or 9, the unsharp mask. I have made images and compared two duplicates of each, one made by stopping at step 6 and the other after step 11, and I have checked them carefully, and I have not been able to find a single difference between the two. I mean, literally, they are the same pixel for pixel image. Yes, I actually did it, and yes, it took patience. Brad, what are these two steps supposed to accomplish?
Well, they are supposed to accomplish, Mark Ashworth, ticking you off. And in as such,
you knew it would.
No,
success.
Success. Here's the deal. I got those. Those are basically the same image prep steps I have used for about 8 years now. And I got them originally from a guy named Harry Stone, who cut his teeth doing a photo preparation for National Geographic. He's really one of the top image guys that I've ever met, and he's given me those instructions for scanning in really crisp line art. And here's the explanation of why it may not be something you're seeing a big difference in when you're comparing side by side. I put two unsharp masks in there midway through the process. Because what an unsharp mask does is it plays up any edges of contrast. And if it sees any contrast anywhere along that image, it'll play it up. It'll bump up that contrast even heavier. And what that does is it enforces a really crisp edge around any two tones that are differing. Does that make any sense? So what that does is your lines are going to immediately get more sharp and more crisp. Now, if you're not seeing any difference, it may be that you're getting a really, really good initial scan and that there's very little difference that's going to happen for you that you're noticing. Somebody else who might be using these same steps might be getting a really, really big difference when they're doing that unsharp mask because they're not getting a really great scan in their initial step. So it's kind of these instructions are good for a number of different types of scanners from the low end to the high end. You just might be getting a really great scan in your first step.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, there you have it.
So are you, Mark? Are you?
So if you're seeing no difference, you give yourself credit for doing very good initial scans.
And I don't think that there's any – are there any steps in the book where – I mean – I'm sure there are a couple of critical ones. But if you're doing that one and you're really noticing no difference whatsoever, that could be omitted, right? This is not an absolute.
I feel really bad that he spent so much time trying to figure it out.
Well, maybe.
I don't need these steps, but no. The guys at Half Pixel would not have suggested it. I'm going to do this again and see. No difference.
Unless you've got a really, really – those unsharp mask commands, especially for a grayscale black and white image – shouldn't take more than a couple seconds to execute.
Mark, here's the real answer. Brad is old, And he is working under the assumption that you're using technology from his era and that you're using those old gas-powered scanners. So please also disregard the chapter on scanners, backup generators,
and getting your getting your steam-powered engine to work with your assistant.
Right.
And skip the part where I talk about light tables that you have to light with a match.
Yeah. Mark, this is the guy that didn't realize that CMYK was actually trillions and billions of colors. All right? You expect him to get something right about Unsharp Mask? Come on.
Come on. Brad Come on, says, get it together.
There are only 12 colors on the whole of the flat Earth.
Please disregard all of Chapter 12, pigmentization. What was it? Hueification?
Colorification.
Oh, callbacks.
Nah. That calls back to Web Comics Weekly number 12.
Oh, I remember them days. But, you know, it's worth repeating, though, because I think I don't want anybody – because I used to have this feeling, too, when I was a younger cartoonist, that if I just got the pen that the guy that I loved uses, then I would be – that would be the thing. Or if I just used the exact step that Mike Lukovich uses, then I would be a great editorial cartoonist. The trick is – and this is true with how to make webcomics too. Art, as in many things in life, there are 10,000 different ways to do it. So if the ways that we present this or that doesn't work for you, then by all means, find another Photoshop book, find another artist whose technique that works better to your style or mode of working, and use it. What we're presenting is not by any means the biblical definition of the one way to do it. It's just a way to do it that we have found works best for us.
Mark, most people can't scan in line art without the superfluous step 8 and 9. It's like Dumbo's black feather. He never needed it to truly fly, but he didn't know that. All right? The magic was inside you all along, Mark. You didn't need steps 8 and 9.
No, but haven't you guys been getting a few emails about the book that, like, I guess I have to do this? And I email people back and be like, well, no, you don't have to do it, but this is just the recommended way to do it.
Well, there's a little element of gotcha there, too. You know what I mean? It's like they're trying to, oh, I gotcha. You can actually do it without doing this. No. And the actual answer is, well, fine, then do it. But that, you know, I sometimes I almost wonder if.
Yeah, do it. See where it gets you.
I got an email that said, you guys, I'm never going to be a famous cartoonist. All right. Where's Ashton?
You got me. You got me. All right.
Well, I think that part
of it too. No, but Brad, you're right, though, especially with technology stuff. There's always going to be somebody that's be like, well, you know, if I'm using a Tandy 800 on a Linux system with your GIMP techniques won't work at all based on your Photoshop.
Oh, my God, especially technology. One of the things I always hate, the question I always hate is, well, what kind of hard drive did you buy? I'm never going to answer that question because there's no brand of hard drive that I could say where someone's going to go, oh, those fail all the time. That's a horrible brand of hard drive. It's like I have a friend that whenever he finds out I bought new technology, he asks me what I got, and he's got 8 or 9 different things that's going to go wrong in the first month of having it. I just can't stand it.
Well,
but
as long as you didn't get a Mac Store drive, I mean.
Well,
really...
no. What? I always get Western Digital. Western
Woo!
Digital.
That was a close one.
Woo!
Phew.
I make my own drives. I don't trust those big concerns.
I fly over to Taiwan and have them custom made.
In the palm of my hand.
That's why I only use Kelitech drives.
Kelitech. Made actually, with sleeplessness.
I don't know what you guys had planned for the next question, but I was just looking at one here and something kind of funny struck me. So.
Well, you better read it because we're hitting the try 15-minute mark here.
Whoa, hey-o. We could split this up into 4 shows. All right, let's do it.
Robbie Riley, and Robbie, you have to – I'm gonna poke a little bit of fun your way, Robbie. I want you to know that it's all in good fun, okay? I was wondering, how do you guys find inspiration for characters and for the comic in general? I have tried starting my own comic many times but always run into that same problem that if I have a cool character, I can't find a way to start off the comic and I have a cool – and if I have a cool idea for the comic, I can't come up with a character that would fit into the comic. Do you have any suggestions on how to fix this? P.S. Have you ever thought of making a comic about the podcast? So basically this guy – can't come up with any ideas of his own, but he's going to throw them around for us to do.
Brad's internal, hey, I'm the cartoonist. Don't give me ideas. Just kicked in.
I know that. I saw that trigger getting turned.
Yeah, did you see it?
Click. You could hear
it. Hey, pal.
In his voice,
do I come down to your work and tell you how to flip burgers? Stay out of my head.
Was I being a curmudgeon? I'm sorry.
No, that was awesome. I love it, Brad. I love it. That's great.
I had 500 ideas just this morning. Miss Pennyworth, give me my tea.
Don't know how to answer that question because I crap ideas for lunch.
That was episode 25, I think.
Stand behind me. Stand behind me and prepare for greatness.
Riley, here are 25 ideas I rejected this morning. They're yours.
Take them.
Enjoy them with my compliments.
Well, I think the answer to his question, if we were to take it seriously, is that he should, especially if he's just starting out, he shouldn't be thinking that much about it. He should just be trying to do a strip on a regular basis and just put his head down and barrel through. And that stuff's going to sort itself out after repetition, don't you think?
I think
do too much paralysis from analysis.
Yeah. I think that
go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say.
These two.
If he's in the.
Clearly, I am Chatty Cathy today. You know what it is? I've been cooped up with a baby for so long. I'm like, I get to talk to adults.
Let's just start crying.
Immediately, I start lactating.
You got this weird crossover. I was going to say, if you're just starting out anything and everything, if you're just beginning everything, then do jokes about lactation because they are an instant hit. You will hit the mark every time.
This is something that I had a problem with when I was younger. You read a strip that you enjoy and love that's, without you thinking about it, or is at least 5 to 10 years old, with characters that weren't developed like this when it started. And you say, I can't create anything like this. Every character I come up with is not as good as what I enjoy.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because you haven't spent 5 years, 10 years getting to know your new character.
Right.
So,
or in some cases, characters in general. Because if you're coming off of your third webcomic, then you might be able to archetype out a set of characters that you're going to be able to work with.
But your characters really aren't who they are at first anyway.
Yeah.
You don't really know who they are, who they're going to be until you've worked with them a bit. They kind of – they have to hit that stage where they kind of start taking on a life of their own.
And if you're doing that and then you discover that it's not – it doesn't feel right, then just – then stop.
You alter it or you nudge it.
Yeah.
Something.
Or just as a creative exercise, if you're comfortable with absurdity as a way to generate ideas, why not take those great characters that you have and just combine them with whatever cool comic strip idea I have and see what you get from it? I mean, if your cool character is a dinosaur and you combine it with an office setting, well, why couldn't you have an office filled with dinosaurs? And it's, you know, I mean, you see where I'm going with this is that, like, you can generate whole ideas from different parts that are seemingly ridiculous but make an interesting angle on things, you know?
Right, now get the door.
Yeah, clearly.
It's Domino.
Either that or Chris had an idea. I wasn't
sure. Aha!
Scott was laughing because
Tyrannosaurus facts.
There it is.
Jurassic Office Park.
Have you guys noticed a little theme here? It seems like everybody is really interested in getting mature fast, and that is I want my readership numbers to be up as quickly as possible. I want my community to build. I want my strip to be, you know, in perfect working order with all of the story and characters running perfectly. And the actual
– And advertising. Plenty of advertising. Advertising everywhere. Bringing in money.
But just like they keep saying, you know, it's almost like being 12 years old and can't wait to drive the car. You know, and they say, just give it time. You've got plenty of time. That's, I guess, what we're trying to say here is that if you really want to do this, you're going to have to be comfortable with toiling in obscurity for a year and a half before anything really starts to catch on. And unless you're the lottery winner, and then good on you. But if, like the rest of us, you're going to have to toil away in relative obscurity for a long time before this stuff starts to click, and that's okay. That's all time that's really well spent.
Let me phrase that a little less depressing. Just give yourself allow yourself the time to develop. Don't be in such a rush to make it. I think that's the number one way to fail. Just give yourself the time to develop. The first mark doesn't have to be the best mark. So
it's true. It's more important that you're just doing it and feeling how it works for you.
It's that story of the painter that painted the swan, right?
Yeah.
With the two brush strokes, and it captured it perfectly. And then the guy that owned the swan said, "Why did you need my swan for 2 years for these two brush strokes?" And then he brought him into the studio, and it was filled with every painting and drawing and medium possible of the swan.
Yeah.
And he had to study it for 2 years to know how to make those two perfect brush strokes. So,
right.
You've got to give yourself that time to learn and grow. You got to polish that rock.
That's a great story, by the way. I've never heard that. I like that.
Oh, I ran through it real fast because I figured everyone's heard it. I've heard it a bunch of different ways.
There was a Picasso version of that.
There is. There's a Picasso version of the horse, right?
No, I think it was a man on a bicycle, and they said, "Wow, how long did it take you to draw like that?" And he says, "My whole life."
Well, yeah. You know what though? In a different angle of that though, I had a painting professor one time. You know, I was asking him, "How much do you charge for a painting?" And he said, in a kind of a half serious tone, "You charge for all of the work, all of the years that it took you to get to that painting." And I thought, "Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it," because I think a lot of artists undervalue the value of any individual piece of art.
$4.5 million.
In addition, I have never sold a painting.
A lot of artists, and this is a whole different topic, but a lot of artists are so interested in just making the sale that they're like, "Oh, I don't know, $15. When it's like, no, you should be charging $1,500 for that, you know?
How many paintings are you selling? None. I'm getting my ass kicked by that kid over there that just started.
Who's charging $15?
$15 a painting. He's killing me.
Using MS Paint.
It says paint in the title. He's looking good.
But you know what? One other thought just occurred to me about the going back to the original question of, like, I have original characters that don't have a story, or I have a great story that doesn't have original characters. Another way to look at it is that you don't necessarily need both. And by that I mean the characters are probably more important. But if you look at Seinfeld, those were great characters that had nothing to do. Or if you looked at Bloom County, those were great characters that had no unifying storyline. And I'm sure you guys could think of other things that have a great storyline but very weak characters. And there are possible ways to build one or another creative life around just really good characters or just really good stories.
The first thing that popped in my head with a great story but weak characters was The Twilight Zone.
Oh.
Because there was no characters.
Yeah.
We didn't care. All we cared about is, what's that twist?
That's true, and I guess that's the Far Side on some level. A single panel.
A good concept and no characters that you care about.
I was going to say The English Patient, but I...
Oh, Scott.
What?
That's a great film. Oh. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, well, don't you think...
Oh, gosh.
Would you guys say this is true or false? I don't know that this necessarily has to be true or false, but I think a lot of young cartoonists, and I'm talking really young, like when you're 10, 11, 13, that sort of thing, I think most cartoonists start off as single-panel cartoonists, and only later do you really become strip or long-form cartoonists, because it's more the, hey, I got a great idea, I want to put it down on paper.
I think that's true.
I started drawing 4 panels.
Really?
Yes.
You would go cross,
and then I would fill it and put the joke in there.
Weird. Well, but before you did that, didn't you just draw kind of cartoon characters on a piece of paper? That's
around.
A single panel.
Yeah.
They'd always say something like, "I love beers," or, you know, "Can't get enough donuts."
Yeah. Right.
And then you're
and this was last week for Chris. So
so my beer's character is standing
so my
there.
my new character, Mr. Beer Donut. He's great. I love him.
Beer Donut.
I love this guy, and it's just clearly it's a stick figure.
I've got no concept for him though.
But I need a place for him to go. Hey, Beer Donut Land. Got it.
Dear Web Comics Weekly, I have a character named Beer Donut Man, and I need to get him in a strip. And our response is, "Stop digging. You've struck oil.
You're gonna drown."
Beer Donut Man. Is all you need. Now get yourself some Final Fantasy sprites and get to cracking.
I'm forwarding you the contact information for my IP attorney. Make sure you copyright that as soon as you can.
Speak to no one.
Keep it secret. Keep it safe. I'm going to go to Gondor and I will return in Fortnite.
Run all the way home, Charlie.
Run home, Charlie. Run all the way home.
Mrs. Pennyworth.
What's that reference from?
What?
What's Run All the Way Home, Charlie?
Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka.
Oh, that's right.
When he gets the golden ticket.
And stop for nothing.
That's right.
Run home, Charlie.
Oh man!
Anywhere, right. Bring me the hemlock tea. I'm out of this business.
I can't even tell how many 15 minutes we've gone through. So we better get to this next question.
I got a diaper I got to get to in a minute. So let's get to one more question here, and this one is a more broad philosophical question. This is from Sean D. McMillan from grieforglory.com. Sean D. McMillan, grieforglory.com. He says, all right, this is a series of questions, but I'll ask them all. Why do you think we keep seeing realistic characters talking to their imaginary animal, stuffed animal sidekicks in so many comic strips? Why is it that the more far-fetched Snoopy became over the years, the more we like them? Does it make a comic strip better to have absurd conceptual characters in everyday life? Question mark?
Scott, you seem to have a good answer.
What? Oh, I do have a good answer. There's not philosophical about it. Nothing philosophical about that question at all. The reason for that, the answer to that question is merchandise. Because nobody wants a stuffed animal or a toy or a mug of the John Arbuckle character, okay? No one gives a damn about the guy that asked who's on first. He cares about the little fat guy that's going, so, the reason why we have Skull is because nobody wants a Brent plush. And the reason why we have Snoopy is because nobody cares about those gaggling, talky kids. And the reason that we have Odie and Garfield is because nobody wants a mug with John, you know, putting on the wrong shirt again for his date. You know.
I gotta tell you what, nobody emailing me asking for a Sheldon plush, but everybody and their brother wants a duck plush or a lizard plush, so I can amen to that.
I mean, it's almost like when I studied advertising art in college, they had different words. I don't know what they use now, but there were two parts of a logo. The logo was your complete brand. There were two parts. There was text, and then there was what they called a bug.
Yeah.
And the bug was the graphical element, like the Nike swoosh or the
– always kind of abstract.
Yeah, it was always kind of abstract. But that's what you – when a person sees it initially, they – in their mind, the name of the brand goes across their head. The thought of the brand goes across their head. Mm-hmm. So you know, Snoopy might have been a very small part of Peanuts, but he is the most recognizable part of Peanuts because he is the bug. He is the graphical the mascot, almost, if you will, but he's the logo of the strip.
Can I take this from a different angle?
Sure.
It's very similar to what you were saying, Scott, but I think this reinforces it in a different way. When I was down, I was given a talk at South by Southwest a few years ago, and I sat in on this other panel about advertising online and stuff like that, and they were talking about how, you know, it's not an accident that most advertising either tries to trigger a sexual response by using women in bikinis, like for a beer commercial, or a cute response with, you know, like, there ain't no bugs on me.
Yeah.
There ain't no bugs on me. That's
I love that commercial.
Oh, I do. I love it too. But or they try to trigger – they trigger an emotional response because it fires a whole different center of your brain than a logical decision-making response would normally – and that's why text doesn't get that response, but the image does. And I think children and animals and conceptual characters like Mr. Jinx or a Jinxlet in Chris's character do a strip, do the same thing, which is it triggers an emotional response that is so much more powerful than any sort of logical response that a human representation would trigger in your mind. And because – and I'll say this as a new parent too, is that – it's not an accident that most of those cute animals are drawn with stunty little limbs, big eyes, small mouths, all the traditional attributes of a human baby that triggers an emotional parenting response. Most comics –
Hello.
Dave.
He was getting too close.
No. This is a compliment. Even Skull, who is a big character, you very cleverly designed his face to have a very cute, childlike innocence to him. And that's – it's not an accident that he's popular because of that sort of thing, because it triggers the same sort of parental emotional response than say, Brent would trigger.
Yeah.
And I have the same thing. It's not an accident that my characters have, like, even like Flacco the Lizard has very big eyes and is designed very sort of sweetly, even though he does sort of big adventurous things, because it's like the sort of adventures of a sweet, naive child in a way.
Almost Mr. Jinx-like in his design, actually, if you...
Wow.
Snap!
Yikes.
We had this whole thing at a con where it's like, oh, I think they're pretty... pretty similar.
We did. We went back and forth about. I remember, Chris. Oh, I think yeah. I was like, I was signing like I signed like three things in a row that where I was like, Mr. Jinx stolen from Flacco, okay. And then you'd be like, Flacco stolen from Mr. Jinx,
and then we amalgamated them into a super adorable character.
It was super, yeah. But Chris and I, we also had that talk, Chris, at Cape one year before you did the Jinxlets about introducing a cute character. And why don't you share your experiences about that?
I was totally on the fence and going, oh, come on. I don't know. Like my audience is not going to be receptive. They're going to know that it's cute and it's toyetic and you're not supposed to do that. And
toyetic? Did you just make that word up?
No.
No, that's a real word.
Okay. Yeah. I knew that.
I only know that because from Mattel, that was a constant word we used to use.
Oh, yeah. I bet you're sick of it. That was for you, Dave. Yeah. But Dave really convinced me, no, you'd be surprised. And so I went ahead and we talked about what the Jinxlet would look like and they would be.
Leah Hernandez helped us design it.
Leah Hernandez designed it. She did a big part of it.
No, she didn't. No. You designed it. You designed it.
I mean, I thought.
Take it easy. Jeez.
Slow down there, Chance. Wow. Slow down.
She did.
So the Disney Corporation helped co-design it. No, Chris, no.
Money flying away. But the response was huge. And I didn't think it was going to happen because I thought that my audience was very stern and science fiction. I want my Vanderbeam and all that. But at the same time, I understood that I couldn't make a plush out of Cutter. I couldn't make a plush out of even Mr. Jinx, who was an adult and kind of gangly. You know, that wouldn't have worked as a doll. You want something that you can cuddle and take care of. I was about to bring this up with you, Dave, that for your example of the characters with the big eyes and the stubby arms, well, how does that work for Hobbs? Because Hobbs, when he was imagined, was a tall guy with long, like a human body, except for his legs. But as a doll, he was one of those. He was a little stubby doll that was kind of slumped over.
But also, without getting into too much detail, like, do you remember his lower legs? They were the stubbliest little
legs.
Yeah,
they were short little legs.
And do you remember the fur around his mouth?
It looked super soft.
Yeah, even when it was drawn, it looked like you wanted to just hug him because he had like a super soft little cheeks. And both of those are not an accident. I mean, Watterson really knew what he was doing.
Yeah. So I'm on board.
And you know, you see those news reports, the human interest stories, like after they announce everyone that was killed in your neighborhood, where they're like, meet the guy that owns every single Mr. Peanut paraphernalia. You know, he
right.
doesn't care about Planner's Peanuts. I mean, I'm sure he's eaten them just because, but he cares about the logo character. He cares about the nostalgia and the history of it and the
– just the design even.
He's drawn to it. And he'd never eat any other kind of peanut when he does because he's loyal to the brand. But yeah –
That's what makes me respect somebody like Lynn Johnston even more, even though I tend not to read for better or for worse. But she's built up a huge audience without any of that traditional cutesy kind of feel.
She had Farley.
Oh, she did, didn't she? And you know what? That always got a big response.
And she had the kids for the longest time were real babies.
All right. Well, that's a good point. Well, can we think of one that has no tip of the hat towards cuteness or towards
Winsbury.
Doonesbury has Mr. Butts, which is a very toyetic kind of character.
No one read
yes,
it because of, yes, but that
I
was well
read
into
Doonesbury
it.
Because of Mr. Butts.
No, you did not.
Yes, I did.
Doonesbury.
I used to think that strip was garbage, and when Mr.
Yeah,
Butts
can I tell you,
up,
Mr. Butts
it.
Brought me into
could,
it, and I'm not kidding about
the
that.
Rest of the time.
Are you kidding me?
I could not care less about Doonesbury except for when Mr. Butts showed up.
I am exactly on Chris's
exactly.
page with that. Mr.
I have no idea what these adults are talking about the White House. I am bored. Give me something else.
Because when I started reading Doonesbury, they were all on the commune. They were not.
You could. I don't know what the plot is.
Oh,
all
yeah.
I know is that Mr. Butts shows up and I laugh.
No, I'm with Chris though. There was only so many establishing shots of the White House that I could take, and I was like, not interested. Even though I like politics, don't care.
Why is
all right, guys, I've got it. I've got it. Tank McNamara.
There's a listener right now in Sweden going, what is this Tank McNamara?
But no, all the other ones have something cute or stubby about it. Like Shu, they were all those cute little birds.
Right.
Yeah. But Tank McNamara, think about it.
Good one.
It's but good,
but
right?
Honestly, I want to name a big one that doesn't have any sort of anthropomorphized.
How about Zits?
Zits, yeah. Baby Blues, yeah. Sally
Baby
Forth.
Blues is babies though.
Baby Blues now doesn't win.
I think Zits is good.
I think any syndicated comic that's been syndicated in the last 10, 20 years, almost any of them, is going to fall into that because the syndicates, for some reason, and correct me if I'm wrong, seem to try to filter out a lot of the anthropomorphic stuff that we've been talking about.
Well, I did hear from a couple cartoonists as I was coming up that one of the models of the syndicate model is no strips with cute animals or babies because they're impossible to get out of a paper.
Get rid of, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
And that's not a merchandising problem. That's an editor that wants to clear his pages every once in a while and can't do it.
I have to know what happens to the beagle.
Can I fire one back at you guys though for about Zits? Is my core argument is that cute characters are designed to trigger a parenting response, and the fundamental core idea of Zits is a parenting response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go there. But Jeremy is far from – I don't want him in my house.
Yeah, you're right. But you see what I was trying to stretch to.
I've got it. Luann. Oh, no. She has a little dog.
Yeah.
Puddles. Crap.
Yep.
Right. Tank McNamara. It's the only one.
Kathy had a little dog.
What about Crankshaft?
Crankshaft.
Crankshaft. Isn't Crankshaft curmudgeon. A little baby to begin with? He's just a little whiny
baby. I
want
to take care of his diaper.
That brings us upon the hour mark.
And scene.
This has been
an excellent Webcomics Weekly.
Excellent episode of Webcomics Weekly.
If we had sponsorship, what a great way to go out on a Depends commercial. That would have been great.
For your Oops, I moments. Crap my pants. Do you remember that skit, Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
Yep, that's
Oops,
great
I crap my pants? All right. Just so no one thinks I was stealing that.
Or you actually crapped your pants.
this is the first show we've had in a while with all four of us, so it has been enjoyable.
It has been enjoyable. What's coming up? Emerald City Comic Con, right?
Oh, yes.
Hey.
How about Cape?
Well, Cape is coming up next weekend. Chris will be there, right?
Yeah.
It's also – Cape's huge because we're going to celebrate the 10th anniversary of PvP there.
Hey-o.
Guess what we bought? We bought – Which – A wedding guest book and pen so that people that come to Cape can sign Brent and Jade's wedding guest book.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool.
So be sure to come to Cape. Go to capeday.com. That's next weekend.
And then Emerald City is on May 10th and 11th in Seattle. At what's the center that it's at, guys?
Ooh, boo.
Oh, let me look real quick. Typing as fast as I can. Oh, God.
Oh, wasn't it right there by the ball field?
No, it's
no,
a different
it's,
place.
It's different.
Oh, it's a different place?
Directions.
Oh, it's at the Washington State Convention and Trade Center.
There you go. Woo-hoo. You got to it.
Wow, that's
And so
fast.
We will be there the 10th and 11th, all four of us signing, sketching, giving out high fives. And we're
going to have the table. We're going to have a huge-ass table. That's actually an industry term, by the way, huge-ass. And it's going to be right next to the Penny Arcade table.
All right. And we're also going to be doing a live form of Webcomics Weekly. We're doing a panel that's essentially called How to Make Webcomics at the show. So that'll be fun, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be basically like what we're doing. We're just going to do our live podcast. We got to figure out a way to tape that.
Oh, that's easy.
Oh, yeah. You know what? In fact, if you're coming to the show and don't mind bringing a camera or – it's always nice to have an extra version too just in case. So
yeah. If
you're coming and don't mind taping, that'd be awesome.
Well, here's the deal. I mean I'm extremely excited about this, guys, because this has quickly become one of my favorite conventions of the whole year. I mean I like going to San Diego. New York is always a lot of fun. But I look forward to Emerald City Comic Con the way a kid looks forward to Christmas because I know the people are going to be great. I know I'm going to be treated great. I know you guys are going to be there. I mean, I am getting really, really antsy for this event to be here already.
And it is in Seattle, which is the greatest city on earth.
Right? I don't think we can encourage you guys enough if you're anywhere near Seattle the weekend of May 10th.
And here's something that benefits us but not the listener. Do you remember last Emerald City when we ended up at dinner with all the people from Farscape?
Yeah.
Right. Remember that? Well, this year the media guests are from a show that we actually care about. I've never been a big Farscape.
Me neither.
But Jane from Firefly is going to be there, and Apollo from Battlestar is going to be there. What if we ended up having dinner with Apollo from? I'd crap my pants. I would literally crap my pants. I'm telling Demonocracy he's got to make that happen.
So I will slit my throat. Do you guys ever go to Google Analytics and look at where your readers are coming from?
Yeah. Of course, all the time.
Because I don't know why this is the case, but for some odd reason, Seattle is the 25th biggest city in the United States. But for me, it has by far the largest Sheldon readership in America. I am so excited to go to Seattle. This is going to be awesome.
You're going to love it, dude. It's huge, awesome. Well, wait, you've been there. Emerald City was where we had that wonderful Garmin GPS that kept telling us the directions in layman's terms that was like, take a ride down an old country road, stop and ask the old retarded kid, the young retarded kid eating ice cream with his hands.
Hey, you're going to see a spotted dog coming up on your right. Now don't turn, just wave to the dog. you gotta make the voice kind of like that voice when you're going on Thunder Mountain at Disneyland. Hold on to your hats and glasses, because this here's the wildest ride in the West.
Oh man! But anyway, definitely make it Emerald City Comic Con. I mean,
please come out. We're gonna have a damn good time.
Hey, you're
gonna see the four of us, honest to God, at our happiest.
Yeah,
really
for
are.
Sure. And then I had another question for you guys before I get you all off the phone. Are you guys going to Heroes or no?
Don't know.
I'm not planning on it. No.
Okay. Because no. Heroes in Charlotte is another. There's three cons that are kind of like my Emerald City grade cons. Emerald City, Heroes in Charlotte, and then Baltimore Comic Con.
When's Heroes?
Heroes is June.
It's too late for them to invite us down, probably.
No, we've been invited. I'll call him and ask him exactly how much space he's got for me. Chris, I could swear he has you listed.
Well, let's find out.
They have a whole section of their con called Indie Island. Yeah, here it is.
That's weird. I'm on the guest list. No, I'm kidding.
You might be.
I'm sweeping up.
Let's see.
I'm sweeping up.
Scott Kurtz, I'm listed. Where's Straub?
Straub is probably not on.
No, it's not. It's not. But I...
He talked to me at... I don't remember what con it was. It might have been Baltimore.
Yeah. You know, Sheldon Drum is the guy that runs that show, and he's another guy just like Demonakis and Mark Nathan over at Baltimore. They own their own shops in that town. They love comics, and that's what the show's about.
Oh man, Danielle's going to that one.
Good guess.
Yeah, and the Chapman brothers from Homestar Runner is going to be there. Indie Island. Chose.
Oh yeah, you know what? If they'll invite us down for a table or something, I'll pick up the flight. I don't mind.
Yeah, I will definitely get us table space. I will call Sheldon. What the?
That's
F?
So weird to say that.
That is his name. His name is Shelton Drum. But I said Sheldon as if it was your strip again. I will call him on Monday.
I have never been to one in the South. What is a comics convention like in the South?
It's just like
dirty and hot.
It's just like the comic conventions in California, except everything is sweaty and sticky.
Nice. Just like Brad likes it. I don't know where that's going.
All right. Web Very Comics good, Weekly.
Hey-o.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
All right. And on that, I am going to go change a diaper. I will say goodnight to you.